Beginning in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. For the week of June 10th, 2006, this is the Rain Report, Ham Radio's audio weekly feature magazine of the Internet, now available as a downloadable MP3 file from www.arnewsline.org. Stick around for a press release I'll read to you about our move to arnewsline.org at the end of this week's program. I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ. Are you receiving interference from BPL, broadband over power lines? Would you even know what to listen for? You will shortly as we bring you our first of two excerpts from a BPL update, a talk given at the Dayton Hamvention last month by ARRL Laboratory Manager Ed Hare, W1RFI.
I'm Ed Hare, W1RFI, and yes, if you're curious, it is a vanity call. I've worked for ARRL since 1986. I manage the ARRL lab. I've been involved with ARRL's RFI program directly or indirectly, although right now we have Mike Gruber doing most of our RFI work. Up until the next revision, I've been the author and editor of a good part of the RFI book, the RF Exposure and You book. I work on a number of industry committees representing amateur radio with groups like the IEEE, American National Standards Association, Society of Automotive Engineers. So I'm kept pretty busy trying to keep your interest well connected to the industry. One of the things I do when I give these presentations at industry, I run briefly through what ARRL is, what amateur radio is. We have about 150,000 members, about 650,000 licensed hams in the country, something that often gets the attention of industry who may not be aware of just how many amateurs there are. We do actually have a BPL manufacturer here, but I'm going to try to represent some of this anyway. Why do people want to do broadband over power lines? Well, let's face it, the idea of broadband at every outlet sounds appealing. And if the wires that were used were actually suitable for this, I don't think we would see any interference issues at all. BPL could be used like cable or DSL with only occasional problems. Broadband to rural areas has been cited as one of the possibilities for BPL. I'm not sure about the economics of it. ARRL has no vested interest in the economics of BPL, so we'll let that kind of run its own course. Utility applications right now, I believe, are what are driving BPL. The utilities don't want to sell broadband. They don't want to be in the broadband business. They're having enough trouble with PPL technology, power over power lines. So trying to do a utility apps like voltage monitoring, outage detection, video monitoring of substations, developing an intelligent grid, and even developing intelligent appliances. I mean, imagine they know the grid is about to go down. It's becoming unstable. Well, if they could control a number of their higher volume users, air conditioners, that sort of thing, take them offline for 10 minutes, bring more power online, they might avoid things like blackouts. So there's a lot of things that the utility companies are interested in doing. Individually, they may not need broadband, but in the aggregate, they do. And let's face it, what high-speed pipe has been available for which good applications weren't ultimately developed? Who would have envisioned what the Internet had become? And surprisingly, ARRL has a role that, in one sense, is helping BPL be successful. Interference issues have really dogged this industry rather badly, and the work we're doing with it to try to help it resolve interference problems, I think, can be, if done correctly and done in a good spirit of cooperation, be part of its success. Well, what is broadband over power line? Well, it comes in two flavors, one of which networks computers within a building using that computer's electrical wiring. Most of that's been brought off on an industry specification developed by the Home Plug Alliance, a consortium of manufacturers. Access BPL is looking to provide broadband access to consumers using overhead, underground, and in-premise electrical wiring. Well, BPL is legal. It's been legal all along under the FCC rules. In 2004, the FCC made a lot of changes. Now, when these were announced by the industry, oh, this is promoting BPL. Well, no, not really. In reality, they put a number of new restrictions on broadband over power line. Well, Part 15 rules do a lot of things. They define absolute maximum limits of emission. This computer, those fluorescent lights, they all have limits on how much noise they can create. Because BPL is a carrier current device, it has to meet the limits for intentional emitters as if it were an intentional transmitter. Part 15 also says that unlicensed devices cannot cause any harmful interference and must accept any interference caused to them. The manufacturer has to meet the emissions guidelines and certain certification requirements. The operator needs to address interference, and together these two actually have a chance of controlling interference to some extent. Well, what's new in the rules? A publicly accessible BPL location database with zip code location and contact information. Now, you're going to hear this here first. ARRL has had an ongoing complaint because that access database was rather restricted. You could look up 5 zip codes, and then you were shut off. I got information yesterday from UPLC. They just opened it up. One click, you can download the whole database. So amateurs will now have the tools to know when BPL may be coming to their area. This is important. This is positive because we can now establish better contact with our local utilities. We can now document our own present noise levels. So if there's a change, we know it. Everybody will understand that that change happened. If there's no change, we'll know it. We're going to avoid some of the contests that have been going on in cities like Manassas where there is interference, and yet the BPL company says, well, yeah, it's interference, but it's not us. So I think this communication will certainly be a major improvement. I applaud the industry for doing it. Under the new rules, the BPL system must be able to control frequency, power level, remote shutoff. They're going to be subject to certification, a more stringent authorization requirement than the present equipment would be. There are 12 blocks of government spectrum that is carved out to deal with that, quote, very rare interference FCC may happen. And they'll be operating under the old rules until July 7th. The real problem here is the devil's in the details. What constitutes harmful interference? When this started out, Commissioner Abernathy, who was at the time serving on the FCC, said that she believed most of the rules restricting BPL can be changed. Well, these rules didn't remove anything. It added a bunch of new ones. Well, is amateur radio in serious trouble? Not doomed, I'd say. The FCC is actually starting to turn around in some ways with a little bit more enforcement action. Commissioner Abernathy clarified later that respecting interference issue was a bedrock position that she had. Well, what are these limits? On HF, probably the area of spectrum most affected by BPL, 30 microvolts per meter, 30 meters from the source. Now, before I got involved with broadband over power line, I thought, well, Part 15 rules, those are really, really weak signals. You could never hear them. Well, that turns out not to be the case. If the absolute limits for unlicensed devices like computers and fluorescent lights were set so low that they could never cause interference, we couldn't build devices. We'd need a Tempest-quality computer, and a reality, the amateur radio service by design uses sensitive equipment and weak signals. We're going to hear BPL signals rather strongly. That legal limit signal, for example, on 80 meters would give you a minus 86 dBW signal at the input of your receiver. Let me translate that. That's S9 plus 16 dB. Now, if you have an S9 plus 16 dB noise across several amateur bands, 24 hours a day, built as big as an entire town, is that harmful interference? It certainly would be to my type of amateur operation. I'm a QRP-er. So the absolute limits by themselves are not enough to protect amateur radio. These legal limit signals are strong locally. Nearby receivers that are tuned to any spectrum BPL is using will see a very strong signal. In residential neighborhoods, the significant risk is amateur radio, citizens band, and international shortwave broadcast. Well, what's harmful interference? Merely hearing a signal is not necessarily harmful interference. That 30 microvolts per meter works to a degree for most of the devices that are out there right now. This computer, for example, here at Dayton, is not causing harmful interference to any amateur radio operator. And if one of you turns on your radio, I'm not turning it off. Okay. If the broadband devices, though, they're different. I mean, for example, at home, I'll occasionally hear a birdie from my neighbor's computer system. I tune a kilohertz away and I call CQDX and don't get an answer there either. Is that harmful interference? Probably not. My neighbor turns on an outside light, makes noise for 10 seconds, and then it quiets down. That's not harmful interference. So these devices that don't emit on all frequencies, don't emit all the time, and don't emit over a large geographical area can actually be controlled some with the Part 15 rules that are present now.
You're listening to the first of two excerpts from a talk given last month by Ed Hare, W1RFI, manager of the ARRL lab. Will continue his talk in a moment. This is the RAIN Report.
The industry has not always been kind with respect to harmful interference. Progress Energy, when they did a trial in North Carolina, they said that, well, any interference that might be coming from their system is not harmful interference as defined by the FCC rules. Now, the FCC defines as harmful any interference that seriously degrades, obstructs, or repeatedly interrupts a radio communication service. Maybe the computer birdie at my house that I tune away from is not harmful interference most of the time. The 10 seconds of noise once a day, I'm going to live with. Some of the other things the industry have said has not been positive either. Well, amateurs think that any interference is harmful. Yeah, I'd say so. Only interference that completely obliterates a signal is harmful interference. The one that really got me is the BPL industry engineers are the experts, not armchair amateurs using vacuum tube equipment. Now, would the industry apply those same standards to the operation of their office telephone equipment? No, if they hear a little crackle on it, they're calling the phone company. So we clearly need to be reasonable, but the kind of levels I've been discussing have clearly been harmful interference. One more important quote I'll give you from industry, though. We want to work with amateur radio to design a BPL system that will not cause interference problems for amateur radio. Motorola. And they worked with us going back, I think, to late 2004 to design a system from the get-go that involved amateur radio. We've put one in at ARRL headquarters. Dick Illman from Motorola is hiding in the room somewhere, probably with his badge turned around. But he gave an excellent presentation that described how Motorola got there, the work they did. And when we put that system in at ARRL headquarters, because of the design, although we heard it outside the ham bands, we could not hear it there at all in the ham bands. He got a round of applause at his presentation for doing so. So manufacturers, some of them are working with ARRL. Current Technologies in Cincinnati is deployed without major interference problems. So it can be done, but it requires communication, it requires cooperation, and it requires science rather than politics. Well, what's this harmful interference? Well, in reality, if a tree falls in the forest and it doesn't make a sound, when it comes to harmful interference, it's not there. This computer is emitting at the FCC limits. It's not causing harmful interference, so there's not a problem. If it were right next door to an amateur station, I might have to do something to protect it. One of the major issues we've had with industry resolves the probability of interference. They say, well, you know, most of my BPL stuff is not going to be near a ham. And even if it is and there's a ham driving around, well, most of these systems won't have a ham there at a given time, so the probability of interference is very low. Amateurs say, well, wait a minute, it's on 24 hours a day, it's filling my entire ham band, I'm a ham, I have part of the power line near me, I have interference 100% of the time. I'm a mobile amateur operator, I drive around and everywhere I go there's noise. Low probability of interference for the operator, for any given part of the system, high probability of interference for an amateur who's located or operating in that community. So we're seeing cases where the industry and amateur radio see things differently. Now, one of the hotbeds of interference regarding BPL has been the city of Manassas, Virginia. The amateurs there have been going out and finding strong interference. The city of Manassas, Comtech, Maine.net, say it's not there. That was a conversation recorded on 40 meters from a station located about 5 miles outside of the city of Manassas. This is the same conversation recorded from within the BPL area. Most amateurs, I believe, would say that S9 level noise on top of an otherwise pretty strong station was harmful interference. NTIA, an entity that's sort of the FCC for U.S. government users, also studied BPL. And what they said is for a land mobile station, you have a moderate to high risk of interference for land mobile stations located within 55 meters of a power line carrying BPL. I drive closer than 55 meters to power lines. If you're a fixed station, we're looking at 450 meters. Now, let me play a few more tapes. These were done in Briarcliff Manor, New York. The first one I'm going to play was recorded right at a BPL coupler. This is going to sound different. It's a different type of BPL. The other one was recorded a considerable distance away, maybe 150 or 200 meters. And this will give you an idea of the different effect we're seeing from BPL with distance from a source. Now, this is to a mobile station, not a big Yagi antenna up in the air. They've actually been able to hear, quote, legal BPL just above the noise floor about a mile from the source. So here's the one at the injector. go to the next street over. About the same. And now I'm going to go, it's about 150, 175 meters away. Now, it's weaker. Receiver AGC was picking up on it, but that distance away, it was about S3, S4, maybe about 10 dB over the existing noise level. Here's another one done in a parking lot where I can be different distances away. This first one was maybe about 25 meters from the overhead line carrying BPL. And now I'll go way to the end of the parking lot where I'm a fair distance away from it. The point I've tried to make with the industry, I think successfully in some cases, not so in others, is that even if interference is very rare, if it occurs, it must be corrected. You can have a system that you've designed that will rarely cause interference, but that's not good enough if someone is actually experiencing harmful interference. And to avoid interference, BPL must avoid locally used spectrum. This could include fixed and mobile, military, commercial users, amateurs, CB, international shortwave broadcasts. Some of the tapes I played for you were of international shortwave broadcast stations. And of course, those international shortwave receivers, you don't know where they are. You deploy BPL in a neighborhood, you can find the ham somehow, at least they're fixed locations. You know who's got a shortwave receiver. And of course, with amateur, CB, business, public service, there are mobile operations taking place just about everywhere. This of course, shows the ham bands. What I provided to the industry is some of the information about the operating parameters of amateur stations. Now, meeting these FCC maximum limits is not enough to protect against harmful interference. The audios I played for you were of signals systems operating just about at the FCC limits. In order to reduce interference to a manageable proportion, you may need to go 50 dB below that. That's been one of the things we've liked about the Motorola system. They're using wireless for a backbone. They're using home plug modems on the 240-volt wiring. They already have notches in the ham bands, and they have added additional hardware filters. They're achieving the 50 dB level, and not surprisingly, that works. We do not hear that in almost any instances that I could imagine near amateur stations. Maybe if a ham operated in his own house with an indoor antenna, he'd have a problem, but the FCC won't have much pity on them.
This has been the first excerpt from a BPL talk given last month at the Dayton Hamvention by Ed Hare, W1RFI, manager of the ARRL Laboratory. We'll bring you the second excerpt from his entertaining presentation next week. In case you're new to the RAIN Report, we've been around for more than 15 years. However, this is our first offering as a downloadable MP3 file, having lost our home we had for 10 years on RAIN Report. Here is the press release Newsline and RAIN sent out jointly this week. June 5, 2006, RAIN Report moves to Amateur Radio Newsline website. Effective Friday, June 9, 2006, the weekly RAIN Report programming originating in Chicago, Illinois, will temporarily move its cyberspace home to the Amateur Radio Newsline website at www.arnewsline.org. This relocation is the result of changes being made by RAIN's longtime web hosting service. We are delighted to have RAIN with us for as long as it needs a web home, said AR Newsline's president, Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF. When I informed our board of directors that HAP and RAIN needed a web home, nobody had a second thought of tendering an invitation. We have always considered HAP to be a part of the Amateur Radio Newsline extended family. The only significant change that RAIN listeners will notice is that the weekly report will no longer be available as an audio stream. Rather, it will be delivered from the arnewsline.org website as a downloadable MP3 file. Yay! This has definite advantages for the listener. For some time now, a goodly number of listeners have been asking if there is any way they can download the RAIN report for listening offline, said RAIN founder and producer Hap Holly, KC9RP. This was not a service available at our former web host, but at the AR Newsline website, it is the way things have operated for years. That makes it easy for RAIN to make the switch to MP3, he said. To record either the current amateur radio Newsline newscast or RAIN report, simply take your web browser to http://www.arnewsline.org and scroll down to download this week's files. If you are using the Microsoft Windows operating system with the Microsoft Internet Explorer web browser, simply right-click on the file you want to download. When the dialog box opens, click on Save Target As and complete the download procedure. Mozilla Firefox PC users follow the same directions, but click on Save Link As and complete the download. Mac and Linux users should consult their operating system instructions. Any media player capable of opening MP3 files, Winamp, Microsoft Media Player, RealPlayer, etc., will suffice for playback. According to Holly, this move is only temporary. The telephone feed of RAIN will continue each week at area code 847-827-7246, RAIN, and I do plan to set up a website later this summer to accommodate the needs of those who may wish to stream my RAIN report as in the past. In the meantime, I feel the temporary partnership with ARNewsline.org is a win-win arrangement for both of us. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bill Pasternak agrees. Hap and RAIN are welcome to stay with us as long as they need a cyberspace home. There will be nothing different about the RAIN report except where to find it on the World Wide Web and the way the audio is encoded as MP3. We are delighted to have Hap and the RAIN report with us. That's 30 for this edition of the RAIN Report, copyright 1990 through 2006, all rights reserved. If you like what you've heard the past 20 minutes, please drop a note to our new host, the Amateur Radio Newsline, on arnewsline.org. You are welcome to distribute this program via the Internet, Echolink, IRLP, or VHF UHF repeaters. Now, for RAIN's founder-producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ, bidding you 73 from all of us at RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network.